Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. Tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages, it says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work, which is called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet or Worksheet process. And it's a tool I've been using for over 16 years to dramatically improve the quality of my life and my relationships and my emotional state and help me turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible internal guidance system that each of us has access to. You can also download the actual worksheet itself. It's just a click on a PDF file, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have called in and actually been stepped through the worksheet process. And those files can serve as a tutorial. And you can actually learn to master this phenomenal process with little more than repeat playings of those audio files and application of the tool in your life. You can also go to the App Store or Google Play and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often for your own benefit and because it might raise some questions. And you have questions or comments, you can email us. You can email Jeannie at jeanie at whyagain.org. And you can email me directly at tjh at mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and it'll let us know that you are interested in making a comment or asking a question. We're working through the Course in Miracles lessons this year, and this workbook lesson is 110. Today's the 110th day of the year. And lesson 110 reads, I am as the Creator created me. The commentary reads, we will repeat today's idea from time to time, for this one thought would be enough to save you and the world if you believe that it is true. Its truth would mean that you have made no changes in yourself that have any reality, nor have changed the universe so that what the Creator created would therefore be replaced by fear and evil, misery and death. These things are not possible. If you remain as you were created, fear has no meaning. Evil is not real. And misery and death do not exist in actuality. Today's idea is therefore all you need to let complete correction heal your mind and give you perfect vision that will heal all mistakes in thought that any mind has made at any time or any place. This thought is enough to heal the past and make the future free. It's enough to let the present be accepted as it is. It's enough to let time be the means for all the world to learn the escape from time and every change that time appears to bring in passing by. If you remain as you were created to be, appearances cannot replace the truth. Health cannot turn to sickness. Nor can death be substitute for life. Nor can fear be substitute for love. All of this has not occurred if you remain as you were created. You need no thought, but just this one, to let redemption come to light the world and free it from the past. In this one thought is all the past undone. The present is saved to quietly extend into a timeless future. The healing power of today's idea is limitless. It is the birthplace of all miracles, the great restorer of the truth, of the awareness of the world. And so practice today's idea with gratitude. This is the truth that sets you free. This is the truth that the Creator has promised you. This is the world in which all sorrow ends. So for your 5-minute practice periods, begin with this quotation. I am as the Creator created me. The Creator's offspring can suffer nothing. And I am offspring of the Creator. And with this statement firmly in your mind, try to discover in your mind the capital S self, the whole perfect self, who is the holy offspring of creation itself. Seek within you who is Christ in you, the offspring of creation and the sister and brother to the world, the Savior who has been forever saved with the power to save whoever touches it. You are as the Creator created you. So today, honor yourself, your true self. Let the graven images you made that you think are the Son of God instead of what he has worshipped, not today. Deep in your mind, the holy Christ mind in you is waiting your acknowledgement as you. Seek this today and find it. This will be your savior from all the idols you have made. I am as the Creator created me. And the words from Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles, Experiment, her chapter 110 is titled, That Time I Failed to Take the Red Pill. She quotes from the book, Think and Grow Rich. When I don't stop daily to inventory all of the gazillion things going right in my life, the crazy voice in my head tries to make me its bitch. Pam writes, on this limited physical plane, life sometimes sucks. But as the Course teaches me over and over again, these thoughts and perceptions are not real. A much higher capital T truth prevails. I am a multidimensional being, and this higher truth is forever available if and when I choose to hook up. Some days I get hijacked, And instead of starting my morning with my course workbook lesson or my AA 2.0 program, I used life drama. She says in parentheses, it's always there if that's what I choose to look for. But I use life drama as an excuse not to take the red pill. I no longer beat myself up. Eventually, I even feel gratitude that each time I forego my daily maintenance, I find Exhibit A in just how powerful the course really is. It's like an exercise program. You don't do it for a week, look in the mirror and say, hey, good looking, you did it. I guess you can quit now. I pretty much have to open that workbook every morning. It's not like it's a really big thing to ask. How hard is it to read a 5-minute lesson? If I was asked to take a pill for some horrible illness, I would ingest it with religious fervor. Lesson 110 is repeated more than any other lesson. I am as the dude created me. I can pretend to be a dysfunctional, unbalanced woman with all sorts of agendas and vendettas, or I can remain as the dude created me, an eternal spirit bringing peace to all the world. The power in this one phrase, not to mention the power of getting up each morning and committing to a higher truth, the power of this one phrase undoes the past and redeems the world. Like Neo in The Matrix, I have a choice. The blue pill, where I remain unaware, or the red pill, where I discover reality without the pre-programmed script. The Course in Miracles today is asking us to choose the red pill. I am as the Creator created me. I remain as the Creator created me. All of my thoughts of pain and fear and drama are false. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can start having a conversation. We have 47 minutes left. How can we support you today? What is on your mind? What, if any, questions or comments do you have from yesterday's show? A replay of the interview with Laura McGowan and her talking about her book, We Are the Luckiest, The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. I did the interview with Laura McGowan as part of a project that I've been donating my time to this past year. It's called The Journey's Dream, and Journey's Dream is a not-for-profit that is working to help rewrite the narrative on mental health to one in which optimal health and well-being is possible and expected. And Journey's Dream is trying to help people understand what it takes to have a healthy, viable, happy, mentally enjoyable life, mentally, emotionally enjoyable life. And one of the primary tools in the beginning of this work is to gain awareness and exposure for this not-for-profit and for its target to help bring holistic, integrative, functional medicine approaches to the forefront in the treatment of mental health challenges. So one of the interviews that I did was in May. It was published in May 19th of 2020. So if you go to journeysdream.org/podcast, you can hear an interview I did with John Gray. Now, John Gray is the author of a number of books. The most popular was Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And he shares very openly about how he spent, I think he said, 7 or 8 years living with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi when the Beatles said that he was so wonderful. And And then he took that and tried to go to his younger brother and say, hey, look, you know, you can get high without drugs and you can stay happy and healthy. But his brother was caught in the cycle of manic depression and schizophrenia. And so John then went to school for psychology and tried to find solutions to his brother's manic depression and schizophrenic tendencies. And his brother eventually lost his battle with mental health issues and committed suicide. But John Gray continued to study and work, and his more recent years he's been looking at the interaction between what we do with our thoughts and how it affects our brain chemistry and what you might do in the way of supplements and, you know, hormone therapies, et cetera, from a holistic perspective, and how you can use your thoughts. And as I was listening to that interview again this morning, I was struck by how close what John Gray is telling us we need to do with our mental, emotional energy, how close that is to Dr. Michael Rice's cancel the goal. Figure out what you really want. John Gray talks about how you can't have anger unless you've got fear or sadness in the person. And the anger is always there to deal with or to cover up the fear or the sadness. So if you really want to help somebody who's angry, help them tap into and process through, feel and release their emotions of sadness and fear. And at several points as I was listening to him talk in that interview, I heard him talk about letting go of what we want, identifying what we want. And it just came a hair's breadth away from sounding exactly like Dr. Michael Rice on the Reality Management Worksheet, where we identify the goal that we're holding on to whenever we have a negative emotion, and then cancel that goal. And as we do that, we literally open up keyways or connections, vibrational connections in our mind to give us access to parts of our mind that we've been hiding from ourselves. And those parts of our mind are, you know, hold the content that's actually giving rise to our negative emotions. So if you'd like to get this work from a slightly different perspective, you might want to go to journeysdream.org/podcast and scroll down until you find or search for and find the John Gray interview, which was published May 19th of 2020. So thank you to Lisa in the chat room who's saying that she heard the interview yesterday and thought it was great, and that Laura seems like she's really on target and humble, and I would have to agree. That's a book I've already read twice, and it only came out, I think it came out at the beginning of last year. And a wonderful companion to the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle, and it's a wonderful companion to the book Empath Survival Guide. I think it's reasonable to assume, to guess, that if both Glennon Doyle and Laura McGowan were to take the self-assessment in the book by Dr. Judith Orloff, that they would find that they are at least strong tendencies toward being empathic, meaning highly emotionally sensitive, and if not full-blown empaths the way Dr. Judith Orloff describes it. And they might, and you might find some valuable ways to think about and cope with the energies that we have to process in life when we're emotionally sensitive. And that's the point of Dr. Orloff's book. She's got several now about empaths and the toolkit for empaths and Empath Survival Guide. And then the other book that I recommend to people, especially when they have any kind of a pattern that sounds similar to this verbally and emotionally abusive pattern, is Patricia Evans, who wrote the book The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize and Respond. And a number of times when I'm in therapy sessions with people, they will describe a situation, and as I'm listening to them describe the situation, I can't stop thinking about that book. And then if I'm having a good day and I'm on, I will remember to tell them, you might want to look into this book. You can listen to it on Audible or you can read it. But one of the last times that happened, I was in a session in the past couple of days, and there was a woman who was talking about her daughter. She's a woman in her 60s and has a daughter in her mid-30s. And her daughter is in a relationship with a man, and despite the fact that her daughter is highly accomplished, a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, and works in the medical field in the active interaction with patients in high-stress situations, her live-in lover routinely tells her that she's stupid, that she doesn't get it, that she doesn't understand, that she takes life too easy, that she never worked hard in school, that she, et cetera. All of these put-downs or insults. And as I listened to that, I just thought, oh, my God, this woman is living what Patricia Evans writes about in the book, The Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize It and Respond. And, again, I talk to people about that book and refer to that book beginning with the title, because she doesn't say the verbally abusive person I'm living with. She says the verbally abusive relationship. Any one of us can participate in an abusive pattern. And what I like to say when this topic comes up is, I can't prevent somebody from saying or doing something abusive to me or toward me or around me. At the same time that that's true, I have to actively participate in an abusive relationship. And part of what I try to help people understand is that the core of the work that I do on MindShifter support groups and on MindShifter radio and with the use of these tools and in my private practice is to help people move closer to that 100% responsibility for what they're experiencing internally, for their negative emotional states, for their recurring negative thought patterns, and for their choice of how to interpret and then respond to the life events that unfold around them. And the more we educate people, the more we put the tools in their hands, the more they are willing to apply those tools and take 100% responsibility for their creation of their experience of life, the better their lives go, the more they come to say, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I never realized that it could work this way. And so the point of it is to help people clear the negative on the one hand, using tools like the reality management worksheet and the journaling process that Michael calls the targeted journaling that Michael calls the mind shifter tool, and tools like the three early memories of conflict, to clear the negative and then to focus on the positive, which is a part of today's lesson. The Course in Miracles wants us to just come back and remember, you are a miracle of the creative energy extending in form. You are as the Creator created you to be. The truth is always true. Life is a miracle. You and your ability to have awareness is a miracle. You've been given dominion over your own mind energy, which is something that you don't initiate, but you get to direct. You get to choose whether to focus that mind energy, which is a creative force, and focus it on the positive, or focus it on the neutral, or focus it on the negative. And as you choose, what's the name of the book? As a Man Thinketh. As you choose the focus of your interpretation of life and the focus of your awareness, conscious awareness in each moment, you create your experience of life. And so the force for creative thought, the creative force of mind energy, is always flowing through the human consciousness. And each human being has been given the ability to choose where to direct that powerful creative force. And what we're hoping to do with this work is introduce people to that actuality to begin with, because many people are not taught that. Many people are not taught that they are creators. Many people are not ushered into the gradual exploration of their emotional states and their mind energy. So our job is to introduce people to that and then provide them the roadmaps and the tools for how to experience themselves and life differently, how to make better choices in terms of what their focus of their awareness will be moment to moment. And the more we do that, and the better our lives get, the better the world around us is. So we're here, and you know, in actuality, doing nothing less than improving the world, one day at a time, one person at a time, one worksheet at a time, one breath session at a time, one targeted journaling session at a time. We are here to help you learn about your power of creation and how to specifically direct that power of creation to create a better life for yourself. Some people say, well, what do you mean better? Well, that depends on the person. Every person is going to think slightly differently about what's going to make the world the perfect place. That's why Dr. Michael Rice has the Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment lecture, where he gives a way to look at how you can divine your own secondary purpose that's unique to you and takes into account the things you are naturally good at and the things you absolutely love to do. And it takes into account what your unique vision of the world, when it's perfect, would look like. So what would it take for the world to be a better place? You get to decide. What would it take for, from your eyes, the world to look like it's perfect? You get to decide. And then once you do, and you're armed with the awareness that you're creating your own experience of life by where you choose to focus your conscious awareness moment to moment and how you choose to interpret and respond to life, and then you're introduced to tools like the Reality Management Worksheet, breath work, EFT tapping, journaling, three early memories of conflict, the Mind Goal Management Sheet. Once you're introduced to these tools, if you choose to apply them, you can have the power, this focused power, and the benefit of having a focus to your mind energy power to be a creative force for good in the world. We're always going to be a creative force for something. There's no two ways about that. The mind energy is always on. It's always creating. We don't get to choose that. All we get to choose is where we're going to direct it. Are we going to direct it towards the positive side of life? Are we going to use our unique life experiences, our unique skills, our unique passions to help us be a positive force for what we would like to see? Or are we going to sit back and say, in judgment and constriction and upset, this is bad, this is wrong, life shouldn't be like this? You know, the old schoolyard rhyme was, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, think I'll go eat worms. We get the choice to focus on the negative or focus on the positive. And as we do, we create our experience of life. So, we've talked about John Gray, and I believe that talk was published May 19th of 2020. That's a good listen, and it's another way to get the same kind of material from a slightly different perspective. And I'd be interested in your comments or questions if you go listen to that interview, if you can hear the same things in it that I do about how close he comes to saying almost exactly the same things that Dr. Rice has built into the worksheet process. That once I figure out what my mind is telling me, when it's driven by fear or sadness, it might be getting expressed as anger. But once I figure out what my mind is telling me and what it's telling me should happen, and I release that and give myself permission to feel the energies of the emotions as they're trying to flow through me, if I'm willing to cancel it, if I'm willing to understand the role of what David Bohm calls sustained incoherence, right? This process of my using my conscious logical mind over and over and over again, thinking it's going to lead to a solution to my mental and emotional problems without realizing that it's the misapplication of that mind energy that's actually creating my problems. So, our calling number is 563-999-3581. Press 1 and let us know how we can be of support in the last 28 minutes of the first half of this show. Susan, your microphone is on.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Tim. I hope it's going to be okay. It's kind of windy here, and I'm walking to an appointment. The whole intro is very thought-provoking, and I've written down the names and the websites. And but something that struck me yesterday was how Laura McGowan went into all the ways that she had been lying. And it was quite disturbing because ever since I've been maybe in my early 20s, I've said to myself, I want to talk in my real voice. I don't want to talk in a little girl voice. I don't want to play the clown. I don't want to get boisterous. Because all of those were lies, but they were self-protections. And I'm not sure what I was protecting from, but in a way, those are the lies. They were like, those are some of my lies. They were like behaviors that I've used for so long. And it's like not standing up straight. I forget to stand up straight. When I remind myself, then I stand up straight. But I have this fake voice. It's actually placed in a different place in my throat. I'm talking to you now with my real voice. I'm sure I have talked to you with my not real voice too. And I don't know whether it's discernible by other people. It's a voice that's choked up into my throat. And I'm just thinking that is one of my lies, not owning my power, speaking out of a stance of I'm not all right, I'm not a good person, I'm not a safe person, whatever. I mean, it was profound, and I've only begun to look at it. So thanks for that. I read her book, but the talk brought that out in a way that I hadn't caught before.
Well, and you'll open yourself up to even more revelations when you understand the denial in the way you started talking about that, where you said it was disturbing. Well, it wasn't disturbing, but it resonated with you. Your interpretation of it resonated a lot of disturbance in you.
Right.
And so there's something that you can explore more directly when you own that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rather than labeling it as something that is disturbing you from the outside. And that's a really good catch. That's what she was talking about that was so difficult for her. It was easy to identify some of the basic lies, some of the obvious lies. But as she decided to be more honest and worked with other people who were committed to being more honest, she got revealed to her in various ways all of the insidious lying and, you know, partial truths and saying things to be nice to other people so as to not hurt their feelings or as to help them fit in or to let herself fit in. And she began to realize how detrimental that whole process was to her goal of being honest at deeper and deeper levels.
That's so true. And all those things she listed, I think it's kind of generally true for many women, particularly, to be have a please, in transactional analysis, they used to call it having a please me driver. I don't think that's very intuitive, but all it means is trying to be pleasing to other people, not even really letting yourself know where you're at on a topic because you're so eager to be acceptable, lovable, all sorts of things. Yeah, not saying no, not drawing the line, what's okay with you. It's endless and it's ongoing. It's an ongoing thing with me. And so anyway, yeah, it was just a real catalyst for some new stuff.
Well, and it's a powerful set of thoughts because so many of us are doing it on autopilot.
Absolutely.
You know, we've been in it for so long that, you know, like the example she gives of, you know, being at a luncheon with some women and somebody mentions a movie and she says, oh, yes, that was lovely. And then she's driving home and she realizes, oh, my God, I don't even know why I said I saw that movie. I didn't see that movie. I lied about it.
Right.
We're on autopilot to try to fit in or to try and make other people feel good. And,
right.
And when I say something to try and make somebody else feel good that's based in a lie, it's not doing any good for anybody.
No, that's true. But my question, too, is we are choosing to be loving in a conscious way. We are choosing, I mean, the enlightened way would be to be choosing to be loving. And so often we choose to be loving. I don't know how to even put this, but how do we choose to be loving knowing that it's not our gut response and knowing that our gut response is probably an ego thing? Maybe it's just a matter of being conscious of what we're doing and choosing and over and over again.
Here's what comes to mind when you say that. And this was part of probably a Q&A from The Way of Mastery where they're talking about the practice they call undressing in front of a friend.
Yeah.
And the idea is this radical, fundamental, profoundly deep honesty that we are not conditioned or taught about in this world. The 22nd lesson from the Way of Mastery says, is titled, Self-Honesty, the Greatest Act of Love.
Whoa.
And so it's talking about being so honest that we start sharing these deeply disturbing thoughts that run through us, knowing they aren't part of us and they don't define us. But things like, you know, if you're sitting with somebody at a table and they reach over and grab your potato chip off your plate and you have this flash of thought through your mind that says, you should just take your fork and stab that person's hand. Instead of swallowing that down, just chuckle and say it out loud. Oh, my gosh, I'm just sitting here having a nice conversation with you. When you reached over and took that chip off my plate, I had this thought of stabbing your back of your hand with my fork. Isn't that ridiculous? Look at all the craziness in our minds.
Yeah.
Being honest at that level is probably better than smiling and saying, oh, would you like some more chips? Yeah, you can have them all. When in truth you're saying in your own head, I can't believe that person just took my chip. This person has no boundaries.
Right.
So at this level, the kind of honesty we're being called to that would be beneficial for everyone is to speak about those negative thoughts, to own them and describe them without being driven by them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to actually stab somebody's hand with a fork, right? I don't have to, I don't have to smile and pretend that I wasn't shocked that they reached over and stole or took one of my, mm-hmm. Pieces of food off my plate.
Yeah. And it takes a certain amazing skill to deliver the message that you said you might say, hey, I had this fantasy, without offending or hurting or damaging the relationship. I mean, there are so many fears connected with being honest.
Right.
For
but look at all of those fears are false, and you are not offending and you are not damaging a relationship when you're being honest. And it doesn't take any immense skill. What it takes is the dismantling of the thought process and the energies that you carried with you into that are connected to fear and thoughts that you're going to destroy things by being honest. Just think about how deep that is woven into our culture, that when we talk about being honest, the first thought you have is, oh, my God, I'm going to offend somebody. I'm going to hurt somebody. I'm going to damage the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's like saying, oh, my gosh, if I add sunlight and water and fertilizer to this seed, I'm going to damage it.
Boy. Right.
Please hear that. There's an insanity in the mm-hmm. training that we've been given. There's an insanity to saying, to be led to the pattern of thought that says, oh boy, but if I'm honest, I'm going to offend somebody, and damage my relationship with them.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite of the truth. Honesty mm-hmm. is the only way to have an actual relationship with the person.
Yeah.
But look at how well programmed that lie is, that mm-hmm. it just flowed off your tongue with certainty.
Yes.
And it isn't until it's called into question that there's even a chance to see how ridiculous it is. Oh, I can't tell the truth in this relationship. I will offend somebody. I will hurt them. I will damage the relationship if I tell the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you were talking about abusive. You gave the title of a book, and
the verbally abusive relationship.
Yes, right. What we're talking about is one party is not forthcoming enough to say what they want or need or can endure or anything, and it's taken to such an extreme. Because the fear is so great, I guess it's in this case of being abandoned. I know that was true for my daughter. She kept her marriage together, thinking it was like that analogy of a frog being put into warm water, and then you heat the water up, and the frog doesn't realize that the water is getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and the water seems acceptable to the frog until the frog dies. Or anyway, my daughter says that's how it was in her marriage. Things got worse and worse and worse, and she kept talking herself out of it, out of seeing
how bad it
the
was.
Way it was, how bad it was, until she started doing covert things, which seemed safer, spending longer times at work. And, of course, there's the whole child-rearing thing where she said, I didn't protect my children. I was too terrified of angering my husband, whose drug of choice is rage. So I hurt my children out of my own fear. Anyway, she's just having a good, hard look at this and doing very well with it. But they're hitched together somehow. That's part of the lie. Keep putting up with things.
Well, let's just breathe into it and settle back into the awareness of how strongly we've been programmed that the truth is dangerous and fearful, and the lie is better. And the actuality of our lives is that there is only the truth, and that is the only way to be in true relationship and to experience the flow of life that we call love. And everything else is false.
Well, I have something
so
else
we had
to
somebody
ask
else. Put, go ahead.
Oh yeah,
so, somebody
I
else
was
put a hand
say,
up.
Put your, good, because it's a different topic. So go ahead and take that, and maybe we'll have a three-way talk or something.
All right, let's turn on the microphone. Area code 513. You're in the air. Who do we have? Area code 513. If you're speaking, we can't hear you. Check maybe for a mute button. All right. So, Susan, you said you had another thought or question?
I've, because of COVID, I've been suddenly, happily in touch with a cousin of mine. And I sent you her info, Karen Montanaro, who's an artist and a dancer. And we have had the most fantastic discussions about our artwork. She's, as I said, a dancer and a mime, and I'm a pianist and a composer. And we have all sorts of not so healthy thoughts and attitudes and practices around what we've done for years and years and years. And I told her that even though I had started playing the piano and finding a way to play the piano without too much of my old garbage showing up, a new thing has cropped up, which has been there all along, which is tinnitus. And when I play the piano, the ringing is intensified. It's as if my ears are telling me, don't play this instrument. This is painful, and it is. And so I've been withdrawing and thinking, time to retire, and now I have a physical reason not to play the piano. And I told her about that, and she said, she had some suggestions along the lines of Louise Hay, that tinnitus is, what did Louise Hay say? Not listening, stubbornness. There was another one, probably the key one, because why did I forget it? Okay. But in any case, she is implying that through self-exploration, self-honesty, I can heal this. I have this profound belief that tinnitus is a brain thing. One in four adults has it. It's something that happens when you get old. It's something that happens in the brain. It's not a hearing thing per se. It's something else. So I'm coming to the whole thing with a kind of fatalistic attitude, like this isn't fixable. But I am open if there is any, I mean, is this just another lie? I guess that's where they hitch together. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the first thought I have is I thought I heard you introduce this by saying that your tinnitus gets louder when you play the piano.
Yeah.
Well, so how could that be something that just occurs in you when you're older and is a part of brain functioning that's inaccessible if it changes when you play the piano?
Well, it would probably change if anybody played the piano. It's just most people don't play the piano, but if they did, there are quiet. I think that's a reasonable thought.
Well, any thought's reasonable. You can have any thought you want. However, my experience of you in talking about the piano is that it's a strongly emotionally loaded enterprise for you and has been a lifelong thing. And so have another physical symptom associated with it that gets worse when you play the piano, and to not be willing to explore your own emotional dynamics and how they're interacting with that seems kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're presenting it in a way that seems to highlight the mental-emotional connection.
Yeah. I'm thinking of Michael Rice's tuning fork. He says if you have a middle C tuning fork and you tap it near another middle C tuning fork, the other tuning fork will resonate. And I'm thinking that's what's happening with the piano. Probably all the notes don't cause the increase in tinnitus, but maybe there's actual physical, the physical mechanisms of the ear that vibrate a lot faster when I'm playing the piano. Anyway, I'm avoiding looking at it as an emotional thing and making excuses. Aha! It's like my son, when he's at his worst, he has said, if I just somehow got an injury, I could retire from doing surgery. I could retire from being a doctor if I could just lose a finger. And I thought, oh, my God. But that's the same thing. And he knows that. So he says, I'm not planning to do that, mind you, but the thought crosses my mind how terrific it would be. Then I'd be out. And I say, well, why not get out already before you hurt your hand?
That's what you're doing when you're giving him advice like that.
It's the advice I need.
Exactly. Yep. This is Dr. Michael Rice's Codependence to Interdependence worksheet.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I give somebody advice, it's the perfect advice for me. It may be good for them, maybe not, depends on their life circumstance. And it will be the perfect advice for me. This is a way for my unconscious mind to help me look at things that some other part of my mind has decided is too painful for it to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do in that worksheet. We say, let's look at everything that anybody's ever done to offend us. Make a list of the people that have offended us on the left hand side of a piece of paper, list them from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need a couple reams of paper to list everyone, but start with one page and then form a column to the right of it and list and title that column what they did to offend me, and then list what they did, and then form a column to the right of that, a third column that says, what's my punishment thought for that person? And then fill that out for everybody that's on the page. And then make a fourth column that says, what's my advice to that person?
Yeah.
You know, if it's somebody that lied to me and I'm telling them they need to always tell the truth, et cetera, then that's what I should do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last column on that page is titled, how I'm going to apply my advice to the other person in my life.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the advice he gives is, when he's doing it in a workshop, he says, and then what you want to do is you want to sit down and make the commitment to write a letter to each person that's ever offended you. And in that letter, write to them how you're going to apply your advice to them in your life.
Right. That's
good. And then he jokingly says, and then mail it to them. And then he says, and the degree to which you're now holding your breath is the degree to which you're in denial. But you don't need to send it to them. You really just need to understand it. one of the dynamics of our minds is to offer up to us in the form of advice to somebody else exactly what we need to do to make our lives better.
Right. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's not just a mind shifter. I mean, that's a different tool, and I know that tool you're talking about. Yeah, that would be very good to do here.
Well, I mean, the worksheet's available. If you just scroll down and you go to whyagain.org and click on the red and white bullseye, the worksheet's available there. And you can also, if you have the resources, you can buy the DVD of the two-hour lecture where Dr. Michael Rice talks about codependence to interdependence, and that worksheet is the tool that goes with that lecture.
I see, yeah.
And it's been a powerful tool. I've incorporated it into the an article I wrote for an EFT website, and it might be one of the ones that's published in the book EFT Tapping for PTSD. They have several of these they wrote, and I discovered the other day that I guess in one of our support groups, we were Googling my name to see where it came up, and these books were printed by Gary Craig or authored by Gary Craig or somebody that he turned his material over to, and at some point they were including articles or emails that people had sent Gary Craig. This was Emotional Freedom Techniques, Energy Psychology Press, and the book for EFT Tapping. And a couple of my articles ended up in that book. I never knew it until after I had that pointed out to me. We were just doing the Google search. What happens when you Google your name? Well, you find out what the world, how the world thinks about you. But one of those is an adaptation of Dr. Michael Rice's codependence to interdependence tool blended with what I had in my bottom line observations, that I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. So I took that and added it to the EFT tapping and turned it into an exercise that looks a lot like Dr. Michael Rice's codependence to interdependence worksheet process, where I learn to take the advice that I give somebody else and apply it in my life.
Excellent. Great. What a surprise that must have been. Find that on there.
It was interesting. Well, you've done it. I don't know if you've reached your destination or not, but you've helped us reach the end of our first hour. So
great.
Thank you for
thank
the calls
so
and
much.
Comments as usual. And I will mute you and get ready for the transition for the second hour with Michael and Jeannie. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation. I think I captured most of those books and links, and I was just in the process of looking on your website for the thing that you mentioned about the observations.
You know, I think that's probably, it's called the bottom line observations. I think it's probably most easily accessible on the mindshiftersacademy.org website under the educational tab. I'm going to have to look that up and make sure that's up there. But one of the pages on that website is, yeah, it's under bottom line observations on the page labeled educational material. And
gotcha.
It's a PDF that people can just, you know, click and print off. And
I got it. Awesome.
And that one, I just pulled it up, and it's only got 9, but there are 10 observations now, so I'll update that in the near future.
Okay.
All right. Well,
fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Have a good day. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, April the 20th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get logged in, I'll go ahead and click on 513. I think 513, you're on the air.
Well, I love it, but like how actually I really need to throw in my speech.
513, you're on the air. Well, I think they don't know that they're that they're online.
Hello,
live,
area code 513, you're on the air.
So they were having a conversation in the background, so I disconnected
yes.
them, so maybe they'll call back in.
Okay.
So welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here with us as we move to the next step in this process of understanding and applying first century Aramaic forgiveness. A profound body of work exists that comes out of the first century Aramaic language. And for the last 40 or so years, I've been working specifically to decode that body of work and get it into the English language in its original form, in an accurate form. There have been lots of efforts to bring the words of the man named Yeshua into the English language. Sadly, most of those words were from the Greek translations of his words, and the Greek translations of his words just don't get it. The man didn't speak, read, write, think in Greek. The man taught, thought in Aramaic, and it is a specific way of thinking that preserves the proper function of the human mind, so that we have the best possibility of entering into life with a perceptual system that tracks truth accurately. And, you know, many people think, well, I saw this happen, therefore that's the way it is, and have no idea that what they saw was a perceptual construct of their minds. And if the quality of their perceptual construct was poor, then they didn't have a clue about what had actually happened. All they had a clue of was the way that their mind constructed the event, which may have had little resemblance to the actual happening in the world. And we did a chapter from Why Is This Happening Again recently on blockage of truth and how when the mind tells us a lie, it fills the space that is available for perception with its lie. And then there's no room for the truth to get in. If the construct of our minds is a lie, and we call our minds lie truth, and, you know, what's the most common lie on the planet? I was thinking about this the other day, and you think about how long people have been in denial and blaming someone else. You know, go back to the creation story. Who does the woman say is the problem? Ah, it was that serpent. And then you get to listen to, what did Adam say? That woman, you know, this is half of his blame game, that you gave me. He's talking to the creator. So it's the woman's fault, and then it's the creator's fault because the creator gave him the woman. That's where the problem is. And they were the first examples of blocks of truth. So, you know, how long has that one been going on? So the most common lie is when prove or we hold the belief that something outside of us is the cause of what's happening inside of us. So the minute that I say, you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you frightened me, one is stuck in the lie. And what we're looking to do is to unwind the lie and bring our perceptual apparatus into line so that it is accurate and truly represents, at least as closely as possible, the actuality of what has happened. And we're going to move forward in the book. You know, we're past that chapter on blocks of truth, and we're now in the arena of ancient wisdom. We're talking to this character, Richard, of ancient wisdom, and we're giving him examples, or we're starting to talk about the Aramaic language. And, you know, you've probably heard me do this before, but one of my favorite little stories to tell when I'm talking about the Aramaic is about how, you know, we were doing a workshop and a fellow from Russia contacted us and said he wanted to come to the workshops, but he didn't speak any English. We know you as a friend, and you happen to be the best translator of English into Russian and Russian into English in the world. And so we asked if you would, you know, mind translating for this fellow. In fact, we know that you've got an extra room in your house, and maybe you'd even house him. You'd say, yes, of course, I'd be delighted. And at the end of the week, you know, we've gone out to dinner with this fellow a couple of times, and it's been quite enjoyable. And I don't speak any Russian, but I really wanted to know what I think about him. So I ask you to tell him that I think he's really cool. And you turn to him in your very best Russian, and you tell him that Michael thinks he's got a low body temperature. Now, you translated exactly what I said, but you didn't say a word about what I meant. And that's the problem with translations. And so much of what appears in the ancient Aramaic is deeply, deeply idiomatic. You know, when I say he's really cool, I'm speaking of an idiom. I don't mean anything to do with his temperature, which the word cool would imply. I'm talking about an idiom that we have. Cool means, you know, he's good. He's a nice guy. We think he's, you know. And so you can't translate an idiom. You just got to know what it means. And so much of the Aramaic language is idiomatic. So we're talking to Richard about this whole idea of the Aramaic language. And the last thought that I'd share with him was that the Aramaic language encompasses the technology that's desperately needed to heal the insanities in our culture. The level of comprehension of human function that's represented in the Aramaic language is just beyond comprehension here. And so Richard's been very resistant to this because he equates anything to do with the ancient scriptures with religion. And so we're talking to him about, well, it's not about religion yet. The religions address some of these ideas, but that doesn't mean that they own this core tool that we're representing here of forgiveness. So finally, Richard relents and he says, okay, you've got my curiosity. And so I'll listen. So I offer him the thought, once you go beneath the misinterpretations and grasp the original Aramaic thought structure in the scriptures, you'll experience a clarity that is profound. What today is called religion has its roots in solid down-to-earth guidance. The original intention of religion was to create a community where it was safe and nurturing to live differently the insanity we humans had created in the world. A community that taught people how life worked and instructed people on how to achieve the best that life had to offer and process them through the world's insanity. Many religions still hold fast to that as their goals. There's an interesting example of this in a film. If you want to pick it up and watch it, it's very, very powerful. And it's entitled Homage to Grace. And it's a true story. It's about a man who went berserk and went into a school back in, oh, geez, I don't know, 20 plus years ago. I'm not even sure what the time frame was. But he shoots a bunch of children in a school. And the Amish community offer solace to his wife and support to his family. And the world just can't relate to this. The demonstration of the principles of the Aramaic in this film are just monumental, like very powerful, and shows how those guidelines can go astray. So if you want to watch a profoundly impactful film, watch the movie Amish Grace. And the scene that always comes to mind when I think about that film is that one of the men whose daughter was killed by this man goes with one of the elders of the Amish community to his wife's home. And the reality that the father who's there with the wife, who is just, of course, grief-stricken, perception this man constructs, seeing this elder and this man at the door, is just, oh, this is going to be terrible. These people are here to shred you and destroy you. And finally, you know, she opens the door, and this man whose daughter is laying in a casket because of her, is this woman's husband, offers his condolences to her and support for her and her family over their loss, because the man then turned the gun on himself. And it's interesting, because when that film came out, there were reviews online. There were people who made comments online, threats against these people for being so stupid. And I mean, just outrageous what some people in real time did around the actual event and then around the film coming out. And it's a demonstration of people who are actually working to live the principles that were taught, that most people can't even start to conceive of, you know, actually being the space of love for your neighbor. You know, it's interesting, in the Aramaic language, this is a powerful principle portrayed in the film. In the Aramaic language, the word neighbor means anybody that you think about. And in Aramaic, they didn't tell you, the man Yeshua did not tell people to love their neighbor. The word he actually used there was the word rachma. He said, have rachma for your neighbor. And rachma, turns out, is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that is a gateway for love to show up in human form. So what he was saying is, whatever, when you think of someone, the way to preserve the sanity of your own mind is to maintain the state of rachma, where love is present in you, that you don't get lost in hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief and all of the non-human attributes that take human life away from us. And so here we are with a man who's actually efforting, while his daughter's body is hardly cold yet, that practice of having rachma for a suffering neighbor. And so we start to get some insight into the principles of the Aramaic in that film, and people's to actually live that that principle. So I point out to Richard that many of the religions are still holding fast to that, but forgiveness is not the purview of religion. And so I ask him the question, do you recall hearing quotes from the scriptures like, do not judge by appearances, do not defile the temple, the wages of sin is death? He says, yeah, it never made a lick of sense to me either. When I was a kid, I heard hypocrites spouting that stuff all the time. Then they would do the exact opposite when they thought no one was looking. It sure turned me off, Richard said with disgust. And so we take ideas like, do not judge by appearances. What's the man saying there? When we go to the Aramaic, an appearance is a construct of the mind, a perceptual construct. And he's saying, just because your mind is telling you something, don't accept that as the truth. This is an instruction he's giving about how to treat your own mind. So don't get locked into your mind's perception, because if your mind is perceiving based on hostility or fear, your mind's telling you a lie. It's a brilliant piece of input. Understand that you've got a leg up on overcoming the insanities of the human mind, or I should probably say the non-human mind. Do not defile the temple. I mean, what does that mean? Don't go throw dirt in the church? No. The temple is your own body. Understand that your body is an energy system it appears to be a physical thing, but in fact, if we look from the perspective of physics, and it took physics to have some a lot of depth of insight into what the scriptures were saying, that your temple is an energy field and there are energies that don't belong in it. Don't defile it. Don't put energies in. Hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma don't belong in the human system. And if they're there, learn to forgive them. The wages of sin is death. Well, you know, God's going to get it. Now God's threatening us. Well, that's the way a lot of the religions have presented it. But in fact, it's a teaching on physiology. The man Yeshua understood that relative to this human energy system, what appeared to be a human form, there were two qualities of energy. There was that which built the system up and that which tore the system down, integrative and disintegrative energies. When we engaged in disintegrative energies, the energy system began to break down. So the result of engaging in energies that are off the mark is that you would die. It had nothing to do with being punished. It was simply, here's how physiology works. So when you get back to the Aramaic, you've got a whole different way of perceiving and constructing your worldview. You've got one that can help to lead your mind toward truth, or you've got one that buys into the lies of your culture and your family system and perpetuates suffering. The man Yeshua was here to teach people how to put an end to suffering, not to perpetuate suffering, not to jump on board with him and go suffer with him. He went through the worst they could apply, came out the other side and said, okay, now you got it. It has had no impact on me. And to the worldly mind, that makes no sense because people don't have the brain cells to understand the truth that was being spoken of. And what we're looking to do with this work is to restore our minds and the perceptual system of each mind to give people the tools with which to be restored to the truth of who we are. And so that's why we're here. And we're on task with the process, working to take it to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. Appreciative of the fact that you introduce others to these principles as you start to learn them. In fact, one of the mechanisms for strengthening your learning of the tools is to teach them. And so we're here to support that as well, if it's your place to do that. And so, Ms. Jeannie, do we have that hand up again? And or is there anything happening in the chat room?
No, Bob is with me from Australia.
Were asking about you the other day, Bob. Glad to see you're here. At least I was asking, wondering how you're doing. Hope all is well in your world.
Yeah.
Go for it, Jean.
Nobody's hand is up. To share just a little bit of what happened with me last night.
Let's go for it.
You know, I had just shared yesterday about the awesome breath session and actually getting to the point of feeling just my energy and seeing things as they truly are and not, you know, solid or real and feeling that intense space of just being. And then last night, just out of the blue, it was like this dark cloud just came over me. Michael kept asking, you know, if there was anything that he could support me with. And I said, you know, there was nothing to tell. I didn't have any thoughts. And you know, I figured I was just tired. And because we had the baby for, 26 hours or something like that. And I said, I'm tired. And then I had a very restless night and woke up this morning and was sharing with Michael my dreams and that I was given the insight that what was going on last night was just this great depression. And just deep, dark depression. And when, you know, a few years before I ever met Michael or knew this work or anything, I had gone through a stage of depression for several years and actually had gone to the point where they put me on Paxil during the day and Ambien at night so that I'd stay calm in the day and sleep at night. And so it was kind of like that energy was moving back out. So I had reached a high point so that I could go into the depths of a dark point and process it, and really processed it through the night, because woke up this morning fine. So, Michael, do you want to add to that?
Well, it was clear that your energy system, which had been so attuned when you were breathing and so vital, that something was going on. I think I asked you 3 or 4 different times, what's happening? Share with me, honey. Talk to me. What's going on? And it was just obvious that Jeannie was in process. And then, you know, by making the request and breathing through the night, she got the insight that this was a layer of that old depression that she had been, I mean, she'd been on medication for, you know, we've been together, what, 17 years now, hon? And prior to that, you know, she had been on medication for about a year and came off of it when she started to do this work. And I really learned a very powerful lesson from being part of this process with Jeannie. And what became really clear to me, and I've watched it happen over and over again and didn't really have the brain cells for it, and, you know, with the fact that we've been both at a new level of process in our own work, just a whole new understanding came forward for me. And that is that, and it actually instructed me or gave me an understanding of why in, let's say, for instance, in the East, you know, India and such, you're required to have a guru. And I see the validity in that now, because each time a new depth, and you know, it might just be doing a worksheet and you just get a new level of vitality, a new level of aliveness, and it's like, wow, that was so cool, a new experience of the presence of love. And what happens is each peak experience that we have requires, if you're going to maintain, it requires that you really truly be committed to do your work, because there's a danger in that new, that experience of that new level of functioning as the presence of love. And that is that a new level of vitality means new depth of unresolved dynamics becomes available. So each time you hit a new level of awakeness, of aliveness, you have the ability, or actually your physiology is going to do this automatically, it's going to start to serve up, start to resonate or bring to the surface the next depth of what needs to be healed from your generational patterns. So that becomes available. And to maintain access to the new level of love and aliveness that you've reached, got to work through what's been loosed by that level of vitality. Elsewise, you run the risk of the newly available unresolved associated content becoming the new root of the perceptual output of your mind and becoming the new norm for your view of the world. And I've watched that happen over and over and over again. And the insight that I got as to why they called for a guru in the East was because the guru knew better. The guru knew, and you weren't allowed to project on the guru. You know, you look at someone who goes to a new vitality level, new depth of hate or fear or rage or anger comes up, and whoever's in their face, they'll tend to blame it on. And they'll start to tell a story about that other person. Well, if it happens to be their teacher, and I've seen this happen. In fact, I was sharing with Jeannie with this intensive that we're doing online. There's been a lot of really powerful work done. And there are 2 people in the intensive that have gone through exactly this. So their process has actually helped me to understand this principle. And it'll probably end up being part of my next book, because I've got a whole written record of their new level of vitality, new excitement, new aliveness. Boy, this is so great, Michael. And then once that new level settles down, new depth of pain and trauma comes up, and the projected stories and, oh, woe is me, I'm going to quit, I'm finished, I'm done, don't want to do this anymore, and the tendency to get locked in that loosed pain that became available because of the new level of aliveness. And so if you weren't allowed to make up stories about the guru, you just had to trust the guru, then you didn't turn that story on the guru, make it his fault, and puke on him and walk away, which is what I've observed people do over the years. And so that the danger of the new level of access to what needs to be processed out becoming the norm or the construct out of which you view your life is a danger in the healing process that I've seen people, you know, you've heard me say this before, I've seen it take people 10, 15, 20 years to come back to the work after, you know, brushing it aside. I've had enough of this, you know, finding something wrong with somebody and then running away and coming back again. One gentleman, as part of his healing crisis, he had been engaged in the work 20-some years ago, and all of a sudden, after some really exciting openings and really getting a handle on some things, became very despondent, and I'm out of here, I don't want anything to do with this anymore. And part of supporting him to get back on track was sharing with him that, well, you remember 20 years ago when you left this work and it took you 20 years to come back? Well, please make the time shorter this time. And it was just a matter of a couple of weeks. He was like, oh my God, the trap I almost fell into. So all of those pieces together, thank you to those folks who went through that. And Jeannie, just, you know, thank you for being willing to stay open and keep moving through things and to share what was going on with you and to really do the piece of work that that new level of vitality that you hit this weekend opened for you. And I just offer that as an understanding for everyone to recognize that it goes, you know, with the ancient scriptures, they talked about strength to strength, here a little, there a little. And in fact, I do address this in my book, The End of Suffering, that I'm working on, but it's kind of been dormant for 20 years or so now, or, well, not quite that long. It's about 17 or so. But the character in that book is being instructed by Yeshua, and that passage from the scriptures come up, here, there, here a little, there a little, with stammering lips and another tongue will I speak to, which is reportedly about the Creator. And the character says to Yeshua, well, why would God do that to us? Why would God speak with stammering? And Yeshua says, no, stop, stop, stop. Remember the game of projection. Remember blame. You know, it was the woman that you gave me that was the problem in the garden. Remember the blame game. And so Yeshua points out to him, no, that's just humans. And now they're blaming God for speaking in a foreign tongue. It's we, he says, who are listening with foreign ears. Yeah, we want to blame the Creator for it. Why stammering lips and another tongue? It's really stammering ears. Our brain cells are misinterpreting out of old dynamics, and therefore we just get a piece at a time, a piece at a time, a piece at a time. And sadly, sometimes people, if something's triggered, will get stuck. And, you know, and it might have been something that happened to them. Well, as Jeannie said, you know, this was 17, 18 years ago. Paxil and Ambien. We're going to wake you up with a drug. We're going to put you to sleep with a drug so that you don't have to feel what's real for you. And Jeannie worked through many layers of that, and the next depth of that happened just this past weekend, and it was very, very profound, very powerful, and is a really, if you've got the eyes to see and the ears to hear, a really deep, profound piece of work to understand and move forward with. So, Jeannie, thank you, thank you, thank you for your willingness, your
intensity, your integrity with your process. It's an honor and a blessing to be a part of it. Yeah.
Your microphone just muffled about 10 seconds ago.
Okay. Is that better?
All right. It is much. And Bob is actually in queue online. Go for it,
oh,
Bob.
Oh, great. Let's say hello to the young man. What's happening in your world? You were on my mind the other day, and I asked if you were around. She said, no, you weren't in. So good to hear from you. What's exciting in your world?
Well, ever since I took complete responsibility for my life, I am master and commander of this life. And my life is awesome because I create it that way. But I'd just like to share on the topic of depression, which is my own personal field of expertise. And what I'm sharing is the result of 36 years of living with it and also researching it. And this is just my own personal story, but I won't take too long.
Right.
Me, where I am now, I believe that we are all soon, that we're all sovereign, unique, and equal, and that's where I'm coming from. Now, I had my first panic attack in 1984, and Western medicine said, oh, yeah, you know, the experts on my life said, you've got a mental illness, take these drugs. And so I did, and I took them all over a period of 20, 25 years and realized that every antidepressant I took turned me into another person that I didn't like. And then while I was going through this process, I developed a spreadsheet of all the antidepressants and all their effects, and there are no side effects. And they all had one common denominator, which was can produce feelings of anxiety, depression, and suicide. And that's when the light bulb went off, and I thought, well, this is a no-brainer. They don't
Hello?
Want cures, they want pesticides. Yeah. And then I had another aha moment was because of my abusive childhood, I'd swallowed all of that pain. And so what I really noticed about when I had that panic attack was I was overwhelmed by the feelings that were within me. And so by taking
right.
the medication, they detached me from those feelings. So that was good, you know, for the initial stages. But then I realized that the immense power of the feelings that I was having was nothing wrong. It was just a measure of how truly powerful I am as a living spiritual human being. And so I allowed all those trapped feelings to vomit out. Luckily, I was on my boat, you know. So I threw the medications away and went to hell and back two or three times a day for a couple of weeks and allowed all those feelings that I'd swallowed, all that terror, all that pain that from my childhood. Also, I did formally go back and heal the wounds of my childhood and came to the realization that depression, you know, and there are no gurus for me. My guru resides in my heart, in my inner intuition. But I just came to realize that I am the only expert on my life. And so now, my life is awesome. And I love listening to what you guys are doing because although your process is different to mine, the end game is the same, and a lot of the steps you're taking, it's like, yeah, well, I'm intuitively already doing that. So that's why I love listening in, because for me, what I have here, what I call is a heartfelt connection with family, because we're all here to lift each other. So for me, there is no such thing as mental illness. And I'll quickly give an example to demonstrate that. Well, two quick examples. PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, the biggest sin that a loving human being can commit is to take the life of another person or witness that. You know, that's the biggest wound that soul can carry.
Yeah.
And so if you allow your programming to overrule your inner knowing, your inner moral compass, then, and you go and kill somebody, then there is a price to pay. And that price is the pain that is manifested in the physical world because of what you've done to your spiritual side. You've just totally, you know, kicked your heart into the bin and just lived your programming. So that's what, that to me is the cause of PTSD. It's not mental illness. It's the price you have to pay. And there is a way to heal that, you know. And then ADHD is another one. It's so obvious. It's so simple. When I was a kid, I was buzzing, you know. I was running everywhere. I didn't want to sit for 3 or 4 hours in a classroom, you know. So if they redesign the education system to do all the physical education in the morning and get the kids worn out, then maybe they would sit quietly in the classroom in the afternoon, you know. Stop denying our nature. That's what the system is doing.
And create a safe environment where they didn't have to keep on in a defensive mode of waiting for the next attack to come.
Oh, yes. All playgrounds are so... Oh, I was getting more abuse at school than I was at home, and that was bad enough.
Brutal. Yeah.
Mum sent me to school as a 5-year-old. She was a German refugee, and this is in England. She sent me to school as a 5-year-old with a crew cut dressed in lederhosen. So I was the crap in the playground. So I got the crap beat out of me at school. I said, Mum, can't I just have a normal school uniform? No, you're a good German boy. I said, no, I'm English.
Right. A German boy in England after World War II. Whoa.
Whoa, yeah, it wasn't. Hey, every step I have ever taken, however painful, has brought me here to contentment. My life has been blessed, and it's been a journey of exploration and a journey of finding out who I truly am, so I've got no regrets. So thank you for letting me share.
Sweet. Well, thank you for sharing, and thank you for being a poster boy for listening to the inner teacher, which is what we're here to support everyone making contact with, because we'll be led to exactly what each individual needs by that inner tutor that is there to guide us all. So,
yeah, well,
nice work, my friend.
What I found is I have found all my own solutions. That's S-O-U-L, solutions at the bottom.
Got it.
Yeah, I found all my solutions in my heart, because for me, the mind is always looking for answers, but the heart already knows. Okay. Thank you.
All right, my friend. You have a blessed one. Lots of love. Awesome. Well, Miss Jeannie, that was very powerful, profound. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. So do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue?
No, we don't. And we have 21 minutes, so we've got plenty of time for a conversation. Press 1.
So if you're out there in this or land, now's the time to press 1 and let's have a conversation. You know? The objective of this work is to open the space to support and bring healing ultimately to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Reconnecting with Source, reconnecting with the presence of love that we are, and working through the insanities that the mind has been brainwashed with. So undoing the brainwash, stepping back into the truth of who we are. And, you know, oftentimes people will see someone out there that has a problem, and the problem matches the one in their own mind, so they'll start puking their rage and their fear on that person out there as though, for some reason, that person deserves what's in my mind, to have it piled on them. And, you know, the truth is, if you see someone who has a problem, you know, someone who doesn't have the light functioning in them, give them your light as opposed to puke on them with the unresolved energetic dynamics that they're arousing for you. And when we become those who bring solutions to the world, when we bring active present love to the world, then an important part of the healing process is accountability. And so being able to stand straight and tall and confront the insanity of the world, and if, you know, if there has been abuse or what have you take place, to be able to confront that is an important part of the healing process. And so our whole objective here is to create support for every mind, heart, and being on the planet confronting every bit of hostility and fear, bringing truth forward, and in the presence of active love, healing. So if you're out there in listener land and you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, if you pick up your phone and dial 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show on your phone. And then if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the phone queue, and we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's going on in your world? What's happening in your process? You have any questions on using the tools? And, you know, if you haven't put the pen to the paper yet with the forgiveness process, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. First word and the last word of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again.org. And when you get to the homepage, if you push the button up in the left corner that says start here, it'll walk you through a whole series of tools. Here's how you apply forgiveness, and it'll just walk you right down through the whole works, right down to radio shows where we have explained the whole forgiveness process, step-by-step worksheet. You can download the worksheets and print them from the website. You can actually do the worksheet live on the website, print and keep a record of your work there. And or you can also go to the App Store in your phone, and there you will find the world's only forgiveness app. And if you type in the words Heartland, that's one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, second word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app created by Genie. And there are two different versions of the worksheet there, a simplified form and then the complete and current version of the worksheet. So you can do them right there on your phone. And the app is designed to have, you know, absolute minimal permissions required. All it needs is permission to use your internet signal in order to function. And that's it. No access to your camera or your text or your contact list or, you know, any of that. And then it'll ask for one more permission if you do a worksheet and you decide you want to save it. We suggest you do save a record of your work. Then it's going to ask to be able to write to the drive. But other than that, no permissions are required. We purposely designed it that way so that it would be as private and you would be able to trust it. Put anything you want into that app and know that it's secure. So take the tools, put them to work, and we're here for support. And if you have any questions, you know, if you look at the conversation that's unfolded so far, I can only imagine there are many listeners that are going, scratching their heads going, well, wait a minute, how does this, or that work? You know, if Jeannie and I had been in your hometown this week and we were doing this workshop in your local library or your local university or your local church or prison or whatever, as we walked down off the platform and we'd had the conversation we've had so far today, you'd walk over to Jeannie or you'd walk over to me and you'd say, but what about, or I just have a quick question. So right now we've got about 16 or so minutes for your quick question. All you have to do is push 1 and we'll be having a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. If you're on one of those stations we can't see, dial in, push 1 and ask the question. And I can't imagine with the conversation we've had, the details that we've spoken about,
that there aren't several people out there wondering about what to ask or what's going on. Sometimes people, you know, get a little nervous or like, well, you know, I'd be on the radio, my voice would be shaky. Can you make it okay for your voice to be shaky? Just go ahead and push one and let's have a conversation about what's on your mind. Or I don't know what question to ask. Whatever question's on your mind is the perfect question to ask. There's no right or wrong question. And in fact, sometimes, you know, if you're new to this work, sometimes your new questions can be profound for even the most advanced students of the work, because you open up thought processes and dynamics that otherwise people have never gone near. So that's one of the beauties for me, for Jeannie and I, of this show, is that we get to engage in the questions of people from all walks of life. In our intensive right now, we've got, we have a young lady from Hawaii. We've got a gentleman from Sweden. We have a young lady from Thailand and just about every corner of the United States. So we get to intersect with and interact with a broad cross-section of people. And the questions that come forward are just so powerful and so profound. So we'd love to hear your voice. And we've got about 14 minutes left for that to happen. So if you push one, we'll be having a conversation. It's on your mind. And I can't believe with the subject we've covered that there isn't somebody with a question out there.
You know, going back to you were talking about Amish Grace, and that was actually a movie made in 2010, but the actual event happened in 2006. And one of the lines that really stood out for me in that movie, there was one of the women who actually lost two of her daughters. They asked her, you know, well, how can you continually, you know, how can you forgive? How can you let go of what he did? And she said, sometimes I have to do it, and I forget the number, but it was like, sometimes I have to do it 30 times a minute until it's complete. And we had a hand just go up. So area code 828, you're on the air.
Hi there, this is Monica.
Hi there, young lady, welcome.
Thank you. I just want to take a minute and then leave the rest of the time for somebody else. And what I want to say is thank you so much for pointing out what you have already said before, and thank you for pointing it out again, that when we reach a new level of vitality, then we might drop into what we think is as if everything's ruined. That's the way I experienced it recently. And I didn't realize that that's what happened. I was on top of the world. Oh, my goodness. Everything is great. I think I've mastered my life. You know, I've learned all I need to. And that went on for 2-3 days. And then, wow, suddenly I was down and feeling, you know, really almost depressed about life and my being here and so forth. So it didn't last very long, but it certainly did occur. And I love the idea of just writing it out. I'm not sure. I think that's what you said, Jeannie. If you can remember what you said, would you please repeat it?
I don't remember.
It's really all of the above. It's keep using the tools so that the new depth of healing that has surfaced, the new thought disorders, the new, you know, whatever it is that you're ready to deal with on the next level, is to keep applying and doing your work so that that new level of process doesn't become the norm for you. And that's what I think happens for people who don't have the kind of support or the kind of wherewithal to realize what's happening, is they then get stuck in that. That then becomes, and I've seen it take people, you know, a decade or more.
Mm-hmm.
They go into that funk, that healing crisis, not realizing it's a healing crisis, not continuing to do their work. They get stuck in it, and that becomes the new set of their minds, rather than recognizing the pursuit is to keep Rachma active in my mind, to keep love present in my mind, and processing through every layer that comes up in response to it. So there's a real trap there and a danger.
Indeed. As a matter of fact, now that we're talking about it, when was it? A week and a half ago when we did the responsibility communication with the group.
Right.
And that was so powerful for me and also tiring. Emotionally and physically tiring, that I'm glad that I did it, that we did it. And I realized that I haven't gone back. I did go back one time and listen to part of it. And there's so much more that I plan to do in the future about listening and taking notes and learning how to realize what my words are conveying and say it, are actually reconstructing the thoughts so that I can say it the way it needs to be in a loving way and a non-blaming, responsible, self-responsible way. So, I really backed off week and a half.
Yeah. I hear, I understand that, and I just, you know, really got a whole new level of clarity with that just in the last few days with the process that that Jeannie's been going through, and you know, well, we both have been going through because we've been both doing an accelerated amount of work, and you know, in terms of the responsibility communication, one of the pieces that I plan to share in the class tomorrow night, or when we come back together, and you know. Perhaps do another extra session in the intensive based in this is that, you know, where there's a lie, you know, the simplest lie, you made me, there's blockage of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's blockage of truth, there's blockage of love, which means there's a disease. When the truth is told, love is present. We can bring love present then. And that any shade of you made me, the most common lie on earth, blocks love and therefore blocks healing, creates a void. And going through each layer of that's a major piece of work. Major piece of work. So.
Yes. And what's still remarkable to me is that I had such a difficult time seeing it. I heard it. I understood what you're saying and I couldn't see that that blaming thing was going on in the way I characterized it and described situations.
Well, and so the mind is so skillful at integrating its root constructs into the world we think we see out there and never realizing that it's really just reflective of the world that's in here. And to gather that insight is monumental.
Right. Yeah, my mind is definitely a trickster and wonderfully creative. And when I apply it to honestly taking responsibility, it will be such a delight. And it's going to be, I believe, that it may take me a while to turn that page and a lot of practice. And it, like something happened the other day, Chuck and I were going somewhere in the car and I don't know. He had a change in the tone of voice when he either answered or asked something. And I got triggered. I felt triggered. And so I said, well, honey, I'd really like to practice. And you're so good at seeing whether I'm being responsible or not in my communication, could I say this in what I hope is a responsible way, and please check me on it? And so we agreed to do that. And we had an interesting conversation about how to describe it. And a question we ended up with was, first of all, I guess, is it really necessary? If it's an occurrence that it just happened, do I need to say when I heard you or when I heard your voice change? Do I need to say that at all? Because that's giving
that may well be another statement of projection, because the voice might not have changed at all, even though I may have perceived it. So perhaps more accurately would be to say, I perceived a change in your voice and what that brought up was, and I'm back to responsibility rather than when you change your voice.
How
bringing back everything.
Oh, my God. Oh, Lordy. Thank you. Yeah, that was really simple. It was just a step over to the other direction. Just a step, but a big step.
Yep.
Thank you.
You know, David Bohm, you've heard me quote him often, and there was an article he was quoted in The New Scientist, and he says, the ability to perceive or think differently is more important than the knowledge gained.
Mm-hmm.
Is to change this transparent projection machine to where it gives us factual information instead of making up a whole world based on the past.
Yeah, yeah.
And its ability to trick us is unlimited.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, our training has been pretty solid. So learning to think it differently and say it differently is just a new skill to be learned. And,
yes.
I'm going to go there.
Thank you for your willingness. All right. We appreciate you and cherish you, young lady.
And I, you, and everyone out there who's listening, bless you all. Okay. Thank you, dear. I'll listen.
Okay. All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
So we're down to a minute and then the closure.
Well, time flies when you're having fun. We are honored and delighted for each of you to be with us in this conversation and moving forward in building the brain cells for a new way of perceiving, a new way of constructing our view of the world that is based on a mind linked to love rather than based on a mind linked to hostility or fear. When the power supply changes, everything the mind does changes. If the mind is based in defensiveness, hostility, or fear, if that's its root set, then we're in trouble. When its root set is rachma, and in the Aramaic, rachma is the set of the mind, when that is the root set, then mind, based in love, starts to flow into information that is accurate and true rather than projection of the past. So thanks for being with us. Have a blessed rest of the day, and we'll look forward to seeing you in tomorrow's show. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.